Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the CEO Cheat Sheet podcast. Today, I have amazing guest, Ali King, who represents Ask Marketing at the role of Chief Marketing Officer.
Right.
And I'm so excited to have you here today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. And I'm not as busy as you are today, as I can see, but I'm so excited to get into, you know, like what Ask Marketing is doing and what your role is. So can you please share?
Awesome. It's funny. Roles are a funny thing. When you just said CMO, I'm like, what does that even mean? I do everything. So I am one of two co-founders of a business called Ask Marketing, ASK Marketing. I mean, quite funnily, a lot of people don't know this, and 5 years ago we used to talk about it and I haven't mentioned it, but ASK actually stands for the initials of Alexandra and Stephanie King.
Wow.
Did you know that?
No. Oh. I was still like, ask, yeah, just ask.
You're right. So that's why we named it, but I haven't mentioned that for a few years, but I caught up with somebody this morning and after working with them for 5.5 years, the penny dropped. So yeah, I'll just throw that in there. So yeah, I own the business with my sister, Stephanie. And in terms of our roles, we really do kind of divide and conquer. I look after pretty much sales and marketing for our business.
Yeah.
In terms of our own sales and marketing. And then Stephanie, I guess, looks after the marketing for most of our clients' businesses or heads that up in a fractional capacity.
Interesting.
So that's how we kind of divide the roles. And then we obviously have a small team of people that help us as well. Yeah.
That's lovely. So you're like acting on the external side and your sister handling the internal side of operations, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, the opposite.
Ah.
I kind of look after the external side from an outward-facing Ask Marketing perspective. So Ask Marketing, sales and marketing. And then Stephanie looks after internal operations, but client-facing ops as well.
Ah,
so that's kind of how we divide it. But it's interesting because we both obviously have marketing skill sets. So
yeah, that's lovely. I mean, in my opinion, you're blessed to have such amazing duo because you can trust each other.
Right.
It's a bit complicated when it comes to co-founders, you know, like building this trust level between each other. And the way you mentioned, like, co-founder is changing the way it's just like, it's not just chief marketing officer. You
right.
can do much more if needed.
Mm.
So that's a different level. So yeah, I'm sorry for underestimating that. It's like co-founder is very important label.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what Ask Marketing is doing? Like, imagine I'm a client. So what I could expect from working with you guys?
Yeah. So Ask Marketing typically works with B2B and or service-based businesses to help them to really own their industry, develop thought leadership and grow their business. And what I mean by B2B and service businesses, we typically work with any business who has a sales function. So the transaction happens offline, typically with quite a long-winded sales process, typically a lot of traditional handshaking and face-to-face relationships. And we help them to kind of do those three things, the thought leadership, the owning the industry and growing their business through two key ways. The first key way is developing a decisive digital marketing strategy, which is a project-based service that we deliver. And then the second key way is through managed marketing execution, whereby we hold our client's hand to offer them basically fractional marketing support at an advisory level to help them stay accountable to achieving those results. So they're kind of the two key ways that
Oh, it's very supportive. So as far as I understood then, besides just creating a project to create a strategy for marketing, you also can provide a helping hand and maybe allocating some from your team or yourself to just make sure it's all is good and they are kind of like happy with the result and getting the traction. Because probably very data heavy, like with KPIs and other stuff, right?
Very. Especially because the bit that we really like to kind of roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty is getting involved in that sales process. So it's really aligning the marketing and the sales metrics, which I'm sure we can go, you know, well into detail of later in the podcast. But
okay,
yeah, it's very much data driven.
Yeah, I was about just to ask like for my friend, actually for myself, as they call
cool.
it, like about whether you work with some IT industry as well, because like that's something we'll get there. But
awesome.
Do you like normally work with pretty much any business or their kind of specific niche or industry you prefer?
It's a good question. We're very agnostic across industries and sectors, but I do think, and coming back to what I mentioned before, the one thing that I guess unifies all of our clients is they have a sales function. So they're, they're business to business, they're selling to other businesses opposed to end consumers, and they're service-based. So they're providing a service, whether that be a professional service or a consultancy service. B2B and services are the two kind of core businesses. Within that, as I mentioned, we're agnostic to industry. Who we work with has drastically changed over the years. I would say if I could really, and I probably haven't verbalized this in quite some time, but at the moment, I would say the past 6 months, the majority of clients that we're working with are financial services, technology services, and building and construction and manufacturing services or That's consultancy to those industries. And I don't know whether it's because those industries are booming because they are essential services and they're not necessarily requiring a discretionary spend from their clients.
Yeah.
So of course, you know, marketing is quite a necessary. It's businesses that are usually leading the fort or businesses that are in a strong position that want to double down on that are investing. And so I think if we think about the businesses that are most likely to continue investing in a premium brand and a premium marketing offering, I should say, it's those businesses who end users see them as being essential or really critical at the moment. So, yeah, I'd say that's where we're at now.
That's cool. And it seems like these kind of businesses or industries, I would say, is also mature. That means it's probably easier to interact with other than like startups. Like I didn't see much construction business startups. So
it's interesting. We do actually also have a startup side of our business that, you know, it's not the core offering of our business, but maybe 10 to 15% of our business comes through strategic partnerships with Australia's tech app accelerators. We do a lot of work with businesses that come out of the Hyper Accelerate program, a handful of clients that have come out of Antler as well. And these are startups and scale-ups who have typically raised their first round of capital, and we're building go-to-market strategies for those clients. But I guess the one thing that kind of unifies our service offering across both startups, scale-ups, and well-established businesses is the fact that we operate in quite a consultancy way to instill the value back into the businesses that we're working with. So as opposed to what you might think is a traditional agency-based approach where we do the marketing on behalf of our clients, we don't operate like that. So we understand the values of the founding team or the general manager or managing director. Some of our clients really want to have an internalized marketing function and just outsource our advisory. Yeah. Other business want to hand over their marketing to an organization. Others are happy with a blended approach. So I guess what unifies our approach across size of business is the way that we take the business leaders and founders on a journey to understand what is important and how to run marketing, how to elevate their presence and thought leadership, and run marketing in a way that could be a matter of us training their internal team.
Very educative.
It's very blended. It's not we do it for you or you do it, or it's really working with that organization. A lot of our clients have internal marketing teams.
Makes total sense, because like I think you build a really great trust by showing that you guys can build your own team or you can use ours.
Right.
So like whatever it is that just works for you. And this, this is a very friendly approach, because I know some agencies that try to capture as much as they can, like the bigger the piece of the pie.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be considered like too aggressive, right? And educational component is super exciting. I mean,
totally.
I'm excited to hear about that. It gets a lot of value for me back as a founder. So can you tell me a little bit more about the goals that business pursue like this year?
In general, across our clients?
Yeah, well, probably for Ask Marketing company in the first place, and maybe some of your personal goals inside the company.
I mean, interestingly, I guess the one thing that I would say we're seeing across both our business and the clients that we work with and potential clients that I speak to is that I think everybody's really fascinated about how AI can improve their business and this, you know, this world that's scary for a lot of people, exciting for a lot of others, and a lot of people that are just kind of putting it in the too hard basket. But I guess the one thing that has always been the same and that will never change is the fact that we really pride ourselves on trying something in our business for 3 months before we ever recommend it to a client.
Oh, that's interesting.
And if I really kind of go deeper with that, coming back to your question, is one thing that we have really tried in the last few months is how we can embrace artificial intelligence and how we can kind of embrace some new technologies and see how they work in our business before we start recommending them and including them in some of the strategies that we develop for our clients. I'll give you a really recent example.
Okay.
One of the goals for us this year was to really elevate our own thought leadership and to own a particular sector or conversation in our industry, which is how to kind of build a robust digital sales and marketing strategy that aligns the two business functions, sales and marketing. And in order to do that, we, for a long time, we have wanted to pull all of our thought leadership content into one piece of content, and instead of developing blogs, for example, every month, do a really long form piece of content that we roll out, you know, could be 3,000 to 4,000 words. So I spent all of January writing a piece of content, and it's a pretty awesome playbook, right? It's about 4,000 words. It's all about businesses and how they can embrace sales and marketing and the integration of both this year, including using AI. So we've kind of ticked that goal. That was a big goal for our business come the beginning of the year. We rolled that out in January, and it's done a few key things. One, it has totally changed the way that we manage our own marketing and execute marketing every single week on week, month on month, and execute on it within our own marketing team. Two, it has changed the way that we recommend our clients approach their marketing. So, you know, how can they leverage that exact same approach instead of creating content every single month, which is a pain for a lot of business owners? How can they wrap their knowledge with a bow on top every 3 to 4 months, like a quarterly type long form piece of content piece that fuels their marketing function? And number three, oh my goodness, I have never experienced lead generation like I have since we changed our approach to this. I'm honestly saying that hand to heart, because we pretty much, I would say 80 to 85% of our business is referral. We've never in 5.5 years spent a cent on advertising. And I know that the role, marketer to business owner to business owner, marketer to marketer, I can honestly say that, you know, you don't expect lead generation from posting content on social media.
Yeah.
However, when you wrap your knowledge into a piece as substantial as that, people who've been following you for years and maybe have been thinking about investing in marketing for their first time see this piece of content, and it's so mind-blowing to them and how excited they are about it that they reach out. So we're drowning. Like, it's a really incredible thing. Like, I think I've done 6 proposals straight off the back of that and closed 3 of them already. So it's awesome. So I think
you're cracking the code, I think. You're cracking the code.
Yeah. And sorry, I should add a fourth thing to that, is that the Google algorithm now, from an SEO perspective, is rewarding businesses who invest in long form pieces of content, because using ChatGPT and the likes can't actually create a piece of content as comprehensive as that that's paired with video summaries and things like this, which we've included in this particular piece that I'm referring to. It's on our website, so I can share it in the show notes or whatever. But it really, really rewards businesses for doing that, because it shows authenticity and credibility and that you haven't used an AI tool to generate it. So now it's something that I'm really urging our clients to look at doing as well.
I love it to hear like the whole story, how the authentic approach, handmade content, you spend your time, you simply beat whatever AI can provide, because like it's always been, I mean, from engineering standpoint, I can tell like AI beats mediocrity. That's true. But it can't get higher than that right now. And when you produce like really, really valuable content that like very comprehensive, it instills like really huge trust. I mean, I've read a few posts from yours and it was like, it's not salish. It's really deep. And I was like, that's interesting. And yeah, I actually had the same probably think process when I was reading it, like, awesome. I would love to work with these guys. They know what to do. And yeah, we'll get to that. But the whole point is like, you really give away something, but it doesn't necessarily mean people can just take it and like implement it, right? It's not that easy.
Yeah.
And this is what makes business happen. So you're not like actually giving away your IP, you're like helping understand like, and I'm doing my marketing right. So it's very interesting.
100%. I'm a believer. I always say this. I'm a believer in the give, take. So 7 gives and then you can take. So I'm just of the opinion that you give people everything and more, and then the people who really genuinely value that type of advice or help will be the ones who you want to work with, you know. So I'm a believer that just give people as much value as you possibly can, and then anything above that, well, then we can have a conversation.
Yeah, I wish I could say this for my clients, but it doesn't work this way.
Once
I create a solution, they
have to build it.
And they get away. Yeah, because I'm too expensive. At some point, it could be like too expensive. It's a bit different. But I'm thinking about right now when it comes to product, like maybe I can, or just general, maybe I can give away some knowledge, maybe not necessarily like super innovative, but helpful to cut through the chase. And this might work. And not like charging for that, because if people study and see the problems I see in the process, maybe they will be interested in how to actually put this into our work.
Totally.
So that's an interesting way. And I think it's new, right? Like we haven't seen such, I mean, I have not seen such kind of content. It's rarely you can find some good piece of content for free.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Remember the days when HubSpot became famous, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago now, and everything was about gated content. Do you remember those days?
Put
in your email address and you can have this white paper. Isn't it funny how times have just drastically changed? But anyway.
Yeah, things have changed and for good, right?
Like, yeah, right.
I was thinking like, customer support is kind of like on the strike. But then like many people say like copywriting is going to be like completely dismissed, but it's not. Because like the quality content of the copywriting, it's like nowhere close. And when I see AI generated content on any website, it really looks AI-ish. It just smells it. I mean, I don't know how it gets, it's getting like too excited. It's just the tonality is off. And you're like, what I'm reading.
I think, you know, for or against using AI to generate copy, the reality is the subject matter expertness that gives real life examples, like if we come back to that long form piece of content that I developed for our business, I think the reason and the feedback that I got even as early as, you know, just prior to this podcast this morning was, you know, somebody saying to me, I really loved the way that you actually shared a real life example and intertwined real world examples of how this particular client of yours was able to do X and Y and what metrics were used every single month and what were examples of content that they produced. And, you know, no one can do that except you. Like it's very, you know, it's very subjective and it's based on experience and you need to give that stuff away because that's the stuff people relate to that's not just...
Yeah. So just taking a little bit of extra side step, I realized like when you are founder of the product, you compare like, how can I delegate this part? It could be very easy to miss the point that you know the best your product and people who needs to do that job must really, I don't know, delve so deep that amount of time and efforts needed for them to create a piece of content that would work, it's incomparable. I mean, it's very tough to delegate this part. So you're totally right. Like you have to... have to be as a founder, be very accountable of what you produce and show. Another question I have, like, what do you like and hate the most in your business? Yeah, like this contrast stuff.
I hate finance meetings. that's normal. Cool. I hate cash flow. no, what do I love and what do I hate? I love understanding commercial business and I love understanding the way businesses work. I love understanding new commercial models. I love business, honestly, like period. I love business. I love listening to founders explaining their commercial business models, how they generate revenue. Is it a SaaS model? Is it a hardware and a software model? Is it a professional services-based business? Is it traditional bricks and mortar? Is it e-commerce? Obviously, we don't work too much with e-com anymore, but... you know, like I really genuinely love at that kind of level understanding commercial business. Mm. I just in any type of business. So I love that side of the business. I love meeting with new business owners every week. I love learning what makes them tick. I love learning what their exit strategy is because the last meeting I had before I drove to this podcast studio was with their CEO of a very, very large franchise business. Who I hope to be on the board of very soon.
Nice.
And I said, what's the exit strategy? And, you know, it's so often that we forget that there needs to be, we need to reverse engineer it. Like the sales and marketing strategy doesn't just come out of thin air. Like when we're talking about established businesses that could be legacy businesses that are 15, 25 plus years old that have potentially been bought by, you know, a new owner from a past owner or handed through a family and it's led by the next generation. You know, what is the exit strategy? Because funnily enough, the exit strategy, let's call it being acquired by private equity, call it IPOing in the next few years, whatever it is, that should determine what your marketing strategy looks like and subsequent to that, how your marketing is structured. You know, like a potential buyer or acquirer of a business would be looking for certain factors about a marketing function. You know, I'll give you one example. If a business is acquired by a certain type of person, let's call it private equity or whatever it might be, you know, no purchaser is going to want to see majority of acquisition, new client acquisition coming from advertising, period, because it is not sustainable enough if things change. Again, we could talk about this as it's a whole maybe separate conversation, but the way your marketing team is structured really also depends on what the goal is for the business. Like if the business is a lifestyle business that you're, Volo, you're happy to be the face of that business forever until you retire, cool, you can be the face of the business. If your business is looking to exit or merge with another business, potentially the strategy may be different. So again, what thought leadership looks like for one business and what a marketing and sales strategy for one business, you know, might look like would be very different from another, depending on what the goal of the business is, right?
Yeah, it requires a very deep thinking process. And
I love that stuff.
You enjoy like getting into that point, like understand the function and tie it to sales.
It's so exciting and I think it's so often forgotten. And I think, you know, coming back to a question, what do I hate? I mean, I hate what most business owners hate. I hate cash flow problems. But it's great. It's great to obviously, it's so important to, you know, still hold that by the reins, regardless of the growth of the business. I don't really hate anything about business. I love business.
That's good.
I love this business. I love clients' businesses. I love business in general and learning about business and getting my hands dirty in as many business functions as I can find time for.
I mean, it's very important when you can't find a lot of things you hate, because like probably Steve Jobs said like you can only achieve greatness when you do what you love to do.
Right.
So this is like, I'm really happy to hear that. But yeah, I know some things are annoying, but must be there. And like cash flow, like all this data. I'm on the other side though. I mean, I love numbers a lot and tapping into it. But yeah, it might be boring sometimes, especially if you have to do a lot of manual labor, which you would love to otherwise delegate to someone.
Yeah.
Cool. Can you share some tips about your daily lifestyle of co-founder, like what helps you get through the day and stay like high?
If you asked me this 12 months ago or 24 months ago or 36 months ago, I would have told you get up early, train. It's funny, isn't it? You go through cycles in your life. I will say I still do get up early and I start every morning religiously outdoors swimming in the ocean. I am an avid ocean swimmer. So I can honestly say that is a really amazing way to start my day. It grounds me, it makes me think clearly. I also think it puts perspective on any issues. Something about the ocean and the fact that they just keep rolling in, much like the days, you know, like you have good ones and bad ones, but that they just keep rolling. So I think that's really important. Do something that, you know, really kind of resets you every morning. My life has changed drastically since Stephanie, my co-founder, had a baby 10 months ago. So a year ago, I would have told you that I started my day by being at the office at 7:30. That's not the case anymore. Stephanie and I are so blessed. We live quite close together. So we combine this amazing new experience of her motherhood journey and me being like a really proud auntie to spend the mornings together. So we meet at our local coffee shop every morning at 7 a.m. religiously. And we basically combine a work whip and a personal catch up all in the one session. It's two batch brew coffees and a walk, honestly. It's after my swim and we basically combine. And again, that's the beauty of business ownership, right? We can make the morning work for us. So 7 o'clock every morning, two batch brew coffees. We do a work kind of powwow and go for a walk together. It gives Stephanie some structure that she needs as a new mum before she quite literally is a superwoman and goes into as busy a day as I have with a baby on top. Incredible.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, it's created a little bit of anxiety and now it's just a shift in mentality. I get into the office late now. I get into the office like 9:30, 10. Crazy some mornings, like to me that is like half the day gone. The old Ali would say that. So that's been a real shift. But having that really beautiful morning time with Stephanie every morning from 7 till 8 has been awesome. Knuckle down, get anything critical done. I think from my perspective, I've got a lot of different things going on from a business perspective with other businesses as well. And so I try and compartmentalize and do one thing on a Monday and then shift my brain Tuesday, Wednesday, and then reshift it again Thursday, Friday and try and group my days. Does that really work in reality? Not always. But I would definitely say that, I mean, like most founders, you know, you've got to prioritize your clients and new clients. And so I just drop everything for proposals, like new client proposals and existing client meetings and making sure our clients are exactly where they need to be comes first and foremost. Stephanie handles the existing clients and I handle new clients. So any new client meetings, any new client proposals, that is the forefront of my week and understanding their needs and getting in front of them, establishing what success looks like and then building proposals off the back of that is pretty much my Monday, Tuesdays.
Yeah, catching up with the team usually happens in the afternoon. Our team is very virtual in nature. Stephanie and I being in Sydney, we've got some team members in the Philippines, and then we have Lauren, our senior strategist in France. Oh, so afternoons work best for team meetings. So my afternoons usually from 3 till 6 are team meetings because that's the time that unites everybody's time zones.
Yeah.
Europe. Yeah, Europe. Europe is hard, right?
Yeah, Europe is hard. I have team in Europe and US and things like getting crazy. Oh, you have clients in US?
No, I don't have no, but I know it's really hard to align. It's tricky. Although Europe is harder than US. I think US time zone can work.
Well, it depends.
Depends if it's East or West Coast.
Yeah, because like East Coast is like just worse. I mean, especially if you have Europe team. So this is like how my work day is like beginning and the end of the day, like in the middle, what I'm going to do. Well, find myself busy with, I don't know, local clients, team. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So the summary is my day has totally changed since what it used to be. But I wouldn't change it for the world. It's like, you know, it's starting a little bit later. I know for a lot of people 9:30 is normal, but for me that's late because I am a morning person. So that's been really difficult for me to change in terms of like it's when my brain works the best. That's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, right?
You can flexibility.
You know, you ask me in 3 weeks and it might be different again. So the flexibility is just incredible.
And I like what you highlighted as well, that it can be fixed at scale. I think it would never work. People are chaotic in their nature. And some days could be great and you don't want to do what you normally do. Yeah. You just want to focus on something that maximizes this value, right?
100%. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's relatable as well for other clients. And I think that's the other really cool thing about being a business owner as well when you're dealing with other business owners is that you're not just talking to them about their marketing, but you can relate business owner to business owner. So I think that's...
Yeah, this is different.
That's powerful.
I love when I can talk and deal the business with any service provider, like considering myself as a service provider and another business, when I know they also run the business because the mentality is different.
Yeah.
And it's like really helps to foster better relationship.
100%.
Great. So now let's switch to the like course action. It was very exciting to know like how the things are operating. We are tapping into some areas that we want to cover here, like how you engage with the clients, how you go through the process of securing the deal.
Yes.
Reporting the progress to the client and then of course like delivering and the tools and processes that you are fine to share without oversharing, of course.
Cool.
That would be great. So can you tell us like for the first step here, how Ask Marketing is engaging new clients? Like do you do like a lot of offline, as you mentioned, calls or do you have like some tools that help you automate the entire process?
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk through tools as well as manual or out and about face-to-face stuff. So if we talk about the very top of the funnel, so we don't do much outbound, I'll be really honest. You know, 80 plus percent of our business is referral. But we do use and have trialed using an amazing top of funnel outreach tool called Drippify. Hmm. Drippify allows you to personalize scalable LinkedIn outreach messages to grow your first stage connections on LinkedIn in a really personalized way. I don't follow a really lengthy cadence because I think it feels like a tool and not a person. So I just sometimes have dabbled in using the first message through Drippify to grow my connections at that top of funnel. What I would suggest though when trialing tools like that is getting extremely laser focused on who you're trying to grow your connections with. So getting really, really clear on industries, getting really clear on job titles, getting really clear on geographic locations. And I have tried that. It's a really great tool. It's switched off at the moment because we're drowning, which is a nice problem to have. But it is a great tool that I would suggest people look into, particularly for any business owners like me who invest a lot of time and money on content for LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So again, content on LinkedIn, if we go down one step of the funnel, like content on LinkedIn only works if you've got great connections, right?
Yeah.
So if you're not investing in building your connections, they're not going to see the content, chicken and the egg. So Drippify for me was a really nice way of me not having to necessarily manually go and add 100 new connection requests every week.
Yeah.
But it meant that 100 new connections would be seeing the amazing content that I invest so heavily in pushing out on LinkedIn every month and every week. Then, again, majority of our inbound business is referral. So there's no tool for that. I mean, we use ActiveCampaign as our sales nurture tool. So all new business deals, contacts, et cetera, get tagged in ActiveCampaign. It's the tool that we use. It's great. I've used PipeDrive. I've used HubSpot. I've used a bunch of tools. ActiveCampaign's the one for us at the moment. How does that work? It's face-to-face. Honestly, I sit down with somebody much like this and there's three kind of key things. One, do I like you? It's the most important. Like, let's be honest. Do I like you? Two, can I help you? Can what you need, really, like, can I genuinely help you? If I can't, let's not waste time. And number three is, can I genuinely add value to your business and do we align on expectations here? So I think that's just a matter of sitting down and human to human understanding needs and having a coffee or a wine and figuring that out. It's, you know, probably 50-50 virtual versus face-to-face. I kind of really reverted to face-to-face now, which is ironic being in a digital business, but I like it.
Yeah, it's what we miss, right? Like, if you do a lot of stuff in the laptop, I genuinely love to meet people because it helps me ground myself. I mean, I probably sit much more than you in front of a laptop, and so anytime I have a chance, like, do you want to meet in person? Yeah, please. Because
totally,
it's much better.
No, I find it really important, and I also want to meet with other decision makers in the business, and I also want to, this is like our strategies are about this. It's the sales and the marketing strategy. So I want to practice what we preach, right? So everything that we include in our clients' marketing and sales strategies, I am following that. So, you know, the initial call happens or catch-up happens. Then a secondary catch-up would happen, which typically I would like to go to the office, regardless of where that is, and meet with any other shareholders or meet with the board or any other key decision makers in the business. I also love going into other people's offices so you can really understand if the values align, if you can genuinely help. You just get such an amazing feel for a business when you go into it. Then a number of things happen from a sales and a marketing perspective. We have a suite and again, this is what we help our clients with, but developing a bit of a toolkit for how to nurture these clients. So is there a piece of content that you can share with them at that point to help them better understand your offering? For me, it's sharing that piece of content that I launched in January.
Yeah.
It's on our resources section of our website. Is it a bunch of voice memo follow-ups? Personalized voice messages to let the client know that I'm thinking about them, which I often am. You know, things come to mind. I see something. I'm thinking about these clients. Is there a case study that would be really powerful for them to see at that particular point as they're taking, you know, your words and your pricing and things like that to the board table to get approvals? Is there a case study? I actually also really love at that point to get my team to send through videos to introduce themselves. So, you know, a client will often say to me, and, you know, they're paying for us, right? We're a people-led business. They don't get just like some account manager that they can't see. They get a touch point with, you know, Stephanie, myself, or Lauren every day. So they want to meet these key people in our team. So I'll get Michelle, I'll get Lauren, I'll get Stephanie, I'll get a key member of our team to introduce themselves in a Loom video. And before we've even sent the proposal, to get them a feel for how personalized and how high touch our business is. At this point, you're getting close to sending a proposal. You know, I'm a really strong believer, and I say this in our strategies, like, share as much as you can about pricing before you share a proposal. I don't ever send a proposal until I pretty much have verbal sign-off. Proposals cost a lot of time, a lot of money, and honestly, what's the point of sending a proposal to just increase your proposal sent metric? Like, it's silly. So until I've really understood, A, those things, do I like you? Do you like me? Can I help you? Do you see value? Are our expectations aligned? Are you comfortable with our pricing structure that I've created for you? At that point that I've got verbal sign-off on go-ahead, I will build the proposal. Then I use a tool. So we use Quilla, Q-W-I-L-R, Quilla. Quilla is a dynamic proposal generator tool. It allows non-web, non-code people to create website proposals in a dynamic way. It also has an inbuilt contract sign platform. So it also allows for videos to be embedded. So you know how much I love a Loom video. So you embed a Loom video into the proposal. The whole thing's dynamic. All statistics are recorded. It's something that we've rolled out in many of our clients who are in financial services or, you know, tech services are using Quilla now off the back of our recommendation. It's cracking. It's 10 out of 10. Love it. I've been using it for 2-3 years now, and our percentage of closed proposals has gone drastically up. So that's cool. Then what happens after the proposal send? Then a bunch of other things can happen. If I haven't already introduced the team, I will do so at that point. Again, I would usually do it prior. Voice memos, you know, all these like traditional, you know, follow-up strategies work really, really well as just the prospective client, the receiver of the proposal, just continuing to see thought leadership on channels like LinkedIn. Yeah. They can't escape you at this point. And I just honestly ensure that that proposal is signed off like as quickly as possible, because I know the rates of proposal to sign client drastically go down. You know, I think it's crazy. I think if you don't sign a proposal in, is it 24 or 48 hours, it goes down 30% per day after that point. So
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So again, don't send a proposal until you have, you know, verbal sign off on it, because it's so much work to create a proposal.
You're absolutely
and customize
right.
it and then make sure it gets signed.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how you guys like create a proposal. It's like creating an SOE, not just like we agreed on some price structure. You mentioned you share the price structure ahead of the creating of the proposal. Like we also kind of have something that I hate a lot. It just a push from the client towards speculation, asking for ballpark estimate. Like in our business, it's not going to work this way. I mean, the low precision usually leads to either too pessimistic estimation or too optimistic. And it's even harder than that. Like I can't create a proposal without investing a good amount of time into it, because it's like a discovery phase on its own.
Right.
But it's very smart, like how you guys make sure you have verbal confirmation. So you're like, okay, it's worth my time or my team's time to create the proposal. Very, very smart strategy.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like onto the next stage, like how do you then remap what you have in the proposal towards to the next stage, like reporting the progress, how client can see like, oh, we are on scale or we are not, like how they can track what's going to happen during the execution of the project.
Everything that we do stems from the initial four-week strategy project. So once we have sign off on that proposal, we go into a discovery phase. That discovery phase is based on four key elements. Number one is we send the client what is called a foundational components document. It is basically us off the back of relooping everything that's been discussed in quite a lengthy get to know you period that I've just kind of covered. Coffees, wines, lunches, like really understanding a client's business. We then reloop internally as a team on all of that and send the client what we call a foundational components doc. That is the client's opportunity to link out to historic performance. Again, it's not marketing focused. It is based on the commercial goals of the business for 2024, board decks, investor decks, whatever is relevant to that business that we need to do our own internal due diligence around, so that that client feels like we are coming into that business hitting the ground running. That's step one.
Nice.
Step two, off the back of that, we host a strategic workshop with all of the key leaders of the business, whether it's all the other members of the board or the senior directors of the business, and anyone with an operational touch point of marketing attends that workshop. That workshop is, again, not marketing related. It is understanding the commercials and the business model and what success looks like and what they value from a marketing resourcing perspective moving forward. Then we do two qualitative projects. One is we get the client to introduce us to a handful of their current whale clients. Volo, introduce me to the clients in your business who you just so wish you could replicate. You introduce me to those clients, and we interview those clients from the lens of Mr. Client. If you knew then, prior to working with Volo, what you know now, since partnering with Volo, where would you have gone to find a business like Volo's? Who would you have cross-checked against? Who would you have got counter quotes from? Would you have searched for Volo on LinkedIn? Would you have gone on Google? Would you have looked at Google My Business reviews? Would you have attended networking events? Where would you have gone? Because the whole point is, right, is that they're going to give us, we don't hear what we want to hear. You do. You're too involved in your business. So we approach this with a very objective lens, fresh eyes, fresh ears, to understand how we can replicate your ideal clients. They give us a very different answer to what they give you, let me tell you. That's number three. Number four is we do a competitor analysis matrix on any competitor, direct or indirect, don't care, international, domestic, don't care, who you want us to secret shop.
Yeah.
So we deep dive, again, from the lens of marketing and sales, but we secret shop your indirect and direct competitors? Are there opportunities there? Are they running a podcast? Are they attending industry events? What's their website like? Do they use case studies? Like, et cetera, et cetera. How's their branding? So those four projects, discovery pieces, foundational components document, strategic workshop, customer interviews, and competitor matrix, those four key pieces of the discovery process then equip us and make us qualified enough to go and develop the strategy over the four-week period. To answer your question, what happens off the back of that strategy in terms of how we are accountable to metrics is how integrated we can be in that business in terms of how their sales performance metrics are working now. So there's marketing metrics, cool. But the reality in a service-based business is that marketing and sales are one in the same.
Yeah.
So the common metrics that we would typically recommend clients be working toward are number of leads inbound each month, number of leads that result in a proposal, and number of proposals that result in a signed client. And honestly, it's marketing's responsibility to look. So before we start working with a client, we get those metrics as they stand now or establish what they are now. If clients don't have them set up, often they don't. And then essentially it's marketing's responsibility in a service-based business like what we specialize in to increase those metrics because they're the metrics that matter, right? Not how many posts you get, how many likes you're getting on LinkedIn. You know, it's the metrics that matter are those sales-driven metrics that change bottom lines.
It's really a deep. I actually feel like I'm on a workshop right now because free value here. So I would say like the most amazing that you tie in the data, and it's very smart, intelligent way, because when you capture the current state before you guys implemented any strategy, you now have your own internal benchmark how you are doing. Because if the metrics are better, you have one feedback, worse than another feedback.
Yeah.
You still have, you collect the data and you've been very transparent with this as well, right? So because as you said, like these three top brackets, so it's called, right? Like they give like to me the most valuable information about how business perform.
Right.
And on the sales standpoint, like I don't know, I mean, my sales team also have like this, I don't know, 15 stages, but you actually nailed it by saying there's like how much leads you have in total, how much gets to proposal, and how much proposal you close.
That's simple. It's so simple.
Yeah, it's everything really in between is part of the drill, but those three, it's like where you want to look at first. So I absolutely love it. Do you use any kind of tool to support this collection of these metrics and then communicating it?
It's a really good point. I wish one existed. The reality of attaining those metrics month on month, Stephanie would be laughing when she hears this, is that it's truly a collaboration between us and the internal head of sales or head of business development in our client's business. Because again, understanding how marketing had a touch point with a client is only as strong as you asking the client what touch point they had with the business. So did you receive a video proposal? How many, you know, did you check on their LinkedIn? Did you cross-check Google My Business? You know, how did you hear about the business? What did you think about the sales process? If you don't ask, you don't know what influenced their decision.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting again. And when we're interviewing, for example, if a client introduces me to their whale clients for us to interview, you know, one of the things I ask is, how did you find the sales process? You know, did you go on the website? Did you receive a video? Were you introduced to the team? Did you see a case study? You know, it's how marketing is able to influence that process. So in answer to your question, Volo, it's really hard to use a tool for it.
No universal solution there, right?
There is no universal solution for that. It's so custom to each business. And every business uses a different tool. You know, a lot of our clients will use HubSpot. A lot of our clients use Pipedrive. Zoho is another obviously extremely good one at the moment. So it's kind of integrating within that. But honestly, it doesn't come without asking pre-pointed questions to the salespeople.
Yeah, like you have the template, like framework, I would say, to know what metrics you need to poke at. And then you need to collect and gather this information no matter what tools are used. You can't just get there and find it yourself. It might be too much. And maybe they don't collect specific metrics of this tool, right?
And you know, this is like quite a nice little, you know, addition here is that's very different in the B2B. We're talking about the B2B space right now. In the B2C space, which is my whole world before having this business, interestingly, you know, working in e-commerce or in businesses that sell online, you know, multi-touch attribution through advertising is very easy now. You can very clearly attribute, you know, that e-commerce sale was due to this touch point, this touch, you know, this multi-funnel attribution. That's cool. That works in consumer. It doesn't work in B2B. So it's manual. Is the answer.
You're totally right. I'm starting to think like in the software development business, like how can I collect these metrics? I'm like, well, unless I ask something
on
the call and like register it somewhere, type it in.
Right.
If I forget it, like there is no metric. Right. So yeah, it's easy as that. And you're right, like sales department, especially people that are involved into following these metrics from the lead gen to the call to the conversation. I've heard another tool, by the way, AirCall, which I want to investigate, that like kind of capture a lot of data when you do the call.
AirCall.
Yeah.
Awesome. Does it just listen to you?
It's sort of. And it helps.
Wow.
It helps track the quantitative metrics from your sales team. And I'm like kind of curious what kind of metrics it can produce, because I don't know, like maybe with the help of AI, maybe it can help with the tonality or level of confidence, whatever it is.
Cool.
But yeah, you're totally right. Right now, the most working practical solution is manual. So, I mean, in B2B, of course, B2C is like, it's easy. I think it's part of it because it's more transactional. Like, you go to the store and purchase something. There is a good track line of what happens.
Totally.
With B2B, you could, I mean, I had some client talking one day, they catch up in 3 months, like how we can count that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even remember some of the parts, like 3 years ago, I talked with someone, now they got to become our client. Like, how can I even predict that?
Do you know what? I went to Blackbird Sunrise, the VC Blackbird, their major event called Sunrise that they run every year, incredible event, in very early 2022 and 2023. We've just signed a client yesterday who met me at that event, who remembered me, who I haven't kept in contact with. And she said to me, Ali, I've been following your journey on LinkedIn. I see your posts every week. And
that's amazing.
She's never liked any of them, I don't think. She's never really popped up on my LinkedIn, but she's been watching this whole time and she's finally ready to engage. She's scaling and she's just raised a bunch of capital. And, you know, she's now ready to launch in an international market, and she wants a go-to-market strategy. So it's cool, you know. I think unless you ask, because I always say, you know, how did you hear about us? You know,
and
she's like, don't you remember we met at this event? So it's unless you ask, you don't know. You've just got to ask.
Yeah. It's, by the way, a tricky situation. Like when someone says something like that, I was like, should I lie and say like, yeah, or I prefer to be honest, like, but it's hard. Yeah. Because you want to do the track, you want to have a good impression, especially if this potential lead can become your client.
Yes.
But yeah, it's tricky. It's very hard to track. But anyway, once you get to the point when let's say a positive scenario, strategy works well, you collected these three metrics and you show like, well, strategy works. You see the numbers, you see the sales. What goes next? Like, I mean, in the process wise, do you have like kind of conversation when you say like, oh, they're going to be just another proposal for the service continuation? Or I'm just curious, and I think listeners as well and viewers, how to make the long term out of this project that you mentioned at the beginning, 4 week project.
It's a really good point. It totally depends on the client. So some clients will want to engage us in an ongoing managed services agreement, which would basically look like us hiring a marketer into our team full time and subcontract them paired with one of our CMOs out to their business in a fractional capacity. Would that result in another proposal for a managed service? Yes, that would be based on a retainer. Based on our day rate, our fractional day rate, where they get a marketing executive and a CMO, for example, 2 days a week. Other clients will want to tap into our advisory services or our fractional CMO services, which is whereby they get Stephanie or I in their business for a set number of hours per week or per month, again, based on a day rate. So again, it really depends on a number of factors. It depends on if the business that we're working with has an internal marketing team. It depends on if the business needs and craves internal training and support for their internal sales and marketers. It depends on if they don't have those things and they're looking to internalize and we need to support the recruitment of that person internally, or if they honestly just need some, you know, some really light touch handholding for the first 3 to 6 months, and then they can run on their own 2 feet. I love the ad, like Athena, love you and leave you. we're not dissimilar. We don't believe that we're going to work with a client forever. There is very much a very set beginning and end date of working with a client. And that's the way we like to be. And, you know, we will always be there, but we know our role and we're very good at staying in our lane with regard to getting the strategy, the people, the infrastructure, the processes and the tools set up so businesses can run. Because majority of businesses that we work with do have an exit ahead, and you know, if they have an exit ahead, they want marketing to be self-sustainable and run like a machine with a process every month. So we get them to that point. And so in answer to your question, another proposal would typically follow after the strategy is complete based on how marketing is going to be run in their business. I usually have a pretty good idea from the outset if a client wants us to be on board for the long haul throughout high touch managed services model, in which case I would share pricing with them in the initial strategy project. However, a lot can change in that strategy project because I think our role is so educational that they might realize that they actually have somebody internally who they want to upskill or whatever it might
be. Okay, that's pretty flexible. And I'm curious, like with the amount of projects that you probably have in parallel, what helps you make sure like you're not burning out the team or don't have like underutilization issues? Basically, I'm talking about workload management. Do you utilize any tools to help you with that?
Yeah, we use monday.com for pretty much everything in our entire business. I love monday.com. Love it. I use it on my phone every day. I use it on my laptop every day, every minute of the day. Everything that we do is tracked in Monday. Because we are not an agency model and we're a managed services model, the maximum number of clients any of our managed service team will handle is 2 to 3. So we are super high touch. And that is because we contract out our team on a day rate. So if we're charging our clients our day rate over the equivalent of 2 days per month, the equivalent of, it doesn't necessarily need to be Monday, Tuesdays or Thursdays, Fridays, it's the equivalent of 2 days per month, per week, I should say, they don't have capacity for more than 2 to 3 clients, like 2.5 clients if you look at 5-day working week. So the answer to your question is it's very evident. It's not kind of like let's just keep adding clients, adding workload. It's quite literally set number of clients to a set number of team members. So we scale. It's chicken and the egg, right? You obviously don't want to hire until you sign a client, et cetera. Yeah. So we're really transparent about that stuff, and we also can hire depending on the client themselves. But we also help clients to internalize their marketing function as well. So again, monday.com unifies everything that we're doing in terms of deliverables and timelines. I couldn't recommend it more highly, honestly.
That's great. So you can have like capacity for your entire team and you can forecast like month ahead, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah, that's something that like I think every service-based business must have because there might be, I mean, believe it or not, I met a lot of founders who did not do that because the business runs fine and they either like stumble upon like hiring, but they don't actually think much when the clients decline.
Yeah.
And this is like where you must think like, oh my God, I don't want to lose these guys, but I don't have money to pay them. And this is how the things are getting. So in the Ask Marketing, you're having like a pretty predictable forecast of the workload for your team, right? So this is like kind of insured against these troubles, except for
you make
major.
It sound so easy, but sure.
Yeah.
It's all perfect, streamlined, very predictable. No.
Yeah. I mean, I know
it's not. I'd like to say it is. It's not. It is as much as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone gets sick. Like, I mean, just real case scenario. We had a really great plan, a little bit on the edge, and the critical role got sick. Now, well, that's the price when you don't actually consider this extra buffer for potential error margin, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's business.
Yeah. But that's what's important you have shared. Like, as long as you have this transparency and you account this somewhere in the tools, it helps you, like, not keeping these things in your head is very important.
Totally.
And, of course, if it's all kind of semi-automatic, I mean, you don't need to, like, create the charts all the time and, like, play around, like, this client went. Like, you know, rerouting, like, different people to different clients. Okay, cool. So I'm having one more question here is about AI. Do you use AI when it comes to tools, like in your day-to-day operations? So maybe it helps, I don't know, compiling the email or whatever it is.
The short answer is no. The long answer is kind of.
That's tricky.
Yeah. So from a sales perspective, there's a bunch of amazing AI tools that we have used and tried from a sales personalized and scalable sales outreach approach. There's a bunch of different tools that I can rattle off. Murph.ai, Rask.ai. These tools allow for video and voice messages at scale in a personalized capacity. These are cool. They're also very expensive, but we have tried them. Outside of that, Drupify does use AI for outreach. ChatGPT, cool. We personally don't use it very much. It can support some things that we do, but we don't use it too much. Yeah, off the top of my head, they're the kind of main ones that we've tried in the sales and marketing arena. Yeah, no.
Got it. Well, it makes sense because as it's identified, it does not fit as an integral component in many businesses because it's very generalized.
Yes.
And this is something that you don't want your brand to be associated with. You don't want to be like, you know, like any other agency. You want to stand out and you have to do extra mile, and AI can't help much. But I'm curious, like, whether it will go in the coming year, because as you mentioned, with Drupify and other stuff, reaching the initial outreach might be very helpful, as it's more deep probably than just a rigid algorithm, right?
Yeah, 100%. Tasks like that, I'm all for it.
That's cool. All right, so I think we covered pretty much everything. And I would say Ask Marketing it's employing very interesting techniques, which I think listeners and viewers will find very helpful. I personally got a lot of interesting insights. And honestly, once you start listing the questions to like what you normally ask your client, I was like, damn, I probably don't have marketing as well. I mean, we do a referral this thing, but I want to change stuff and exactly make it like more solid, self-sustaining.
Yeah.
And I was like, this question I should probably ask myself.
Oh, good. That's good. I'm glad. Yeah, adding value.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really powerful as well when it comes to this, I would say, intelligent sales.
Yeah.
Because like if it doesn't work, you have a feeling that you helped someone. If it does, well, you have a business. So
exactly.
Absolutely to the point. I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Cool. On the one finishing point, I would like to ask about rather weird question, but I have to do this as a format of this podcast. No worries. What is something not present on your LinkedIn? Not like something that people can find, but you want to share. Yeah, like some people share that they play guitar, being a part of the band, topping into a little bit of personal territory. So,
I have a piece of lead pencil in my stomach.
What? Oh my God. Really?
Yeah.
Lead? Oh.
Yeah, lead. I have lead in my stomach. Yeah, so...
That's crazy. I mean, I hadn't heard anything like that.
Well, I mean, I could have given you something like, oh, my extra outside passions are this, and these are the sports I play, and this is the books that I read, but everyone asks you this. So let's go really left and center. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. So it happened in primary school, and I was running around a corner, and a girl named Tiffany.
Oh, okay.
She was really mean. Yeah, she shoved a lead pencil and it broke and it's in my stomach and I can't get it out. Anyway, you can see it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you can see the lead just below the surface of the skin.
Well, that's crazy.
Bet you weren't expecting to hear that, Velo.
No, you actually caught me off guard completely here. I was like, in my engineering brain is now starting working like,
how do I get it out?
Yeah, how do I get it out? Like, should I get it out?
How do I fix this problem?
Oh, yeah, my God.
That's so funny.
Whew. Well, I have to ask one question. Does it really bother you or?
No.
Well, that's probably something I've heard another day. If it's not a problem, don't touch it.
Right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yes.
It's fine. It lives there now.
That's interesting. Well, thanks very much for sharing it. I actually, again, delighted a lot with having this podcast. And I personally think that everyone should follow the same footpath you guys, like you're pioneering probably the future. Because with all these AI and technologies, we don't want to be surrounded purely entirely by robots. Yeah. You want to have this human touch. I'm probably right on the fact that I want to be surrounded by human. Yeah. You probably want to be surrounded by human. And mixing this with the technology to the point we don't lose this touch is extremely important. So totally. From this conversation, I learned like I'm on the right path myself as well, trying to meet people as much as possible. Because sometimes you're getting out of the comfort zone, especially if you're, I mean, I consider myself a nerd, like loving sitting in front of a laptop, but much better.
Get out there.
Great. How people can contact Ask Marketing for those who are interested to try reach you out?
Yeah, on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is obviously the number one, Alexandra King or Ali on LinkedIn. Ask Marketing, askmarketing.com.au is our website, would be the best two ways.
Lovely. All right. Thank you very much for being my guest today, Ali.
Thanks, Valerie.
Absolutely delighted. And
third time lucky. Yeah. We got there.
Yeah, I'm kind of tricky. I'm not sharing, but there were some technical difficulties. This is the third attempt we're recording this podcast. So you pushed me to say that.
Yeah, we got it this time.
Yeah, but it's the best take.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys. And see you in the next episodes.